integrity in each of the services is also critical to a strong military. General Amos, I have become friends with Major James Wyrick, United States Marine Corps, who I sincerely believe is a man of integrity. Did you fear Major Wyrick at any point?
My name is James Wyrick, and this is Military Justice, my podcast about the system of justice that governs those who protect our nation. Welcome back, friends, and thank you for being here for Military Justice again. Today, the guest is Todd South. We're going to be talking about a recent court-martial conviction stemming from a hazing-related death at Parris Island. I had Todd on the show earlier, and that's episode 21, entitled Death at Parris Island, if you'd like to listen and get some more information about this. If not, stay tuned. I've got Todd South of the Marine Corps Times, and just sit back and enjoy. And always, thanks for being here. Welcome to the show again. We have reporter Todd South. Todd, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Wyrick. How are you doing?
Well, doing well. So tell me, the case we're talking about, the hazing case from, is it 2016 when this case first broke?
Well, that's kind of when it first became public with the death of recruit Raheel Sadiq. But a lot of the stuff charged in the court-martial we're going to be discussing actually began almost a year before that in early spring of 2015.
So, and today we're talking about, is it Lieutenant Colonel Kassoon? Is that how it's pronounced?
Correct. Marine Lieutenant Colonel Joshua Kassoon.
And he was the battalion commander. You went through Parris Island, right?
No, actually, I'm a San Diego Marine. Oh. I'm a Hollywood guy.
Yeah, same here. I was over on that side. But they're pretty much mirrors except for having the females at Parris Island. So you have battalion commanders, three battalions, then you have above them the regimental commander, and then really the commanding general. That's about the height of the leadership structure there, right?
Very much so. It's very direct. It's not like your infantry battalions or your maintenance and support, which is fleshed out with a lot of different hats. This is very streamlined. It's very tight leadership. Yeah.
So tell us about this most recent court-martial.
So I actually first encountered this story a year ago, shortly after I started working here. I was sent to cover the Article 32 hearing for Lieutenant Colonel Kassoon. At that time, a number of different drill instructors were facing charges out of the events of that, but he was the highest-ranking person involved whatsoever to be charged. And it was a marathon hearing. It was expected to go 3 days. It lasted 1 day. It was nonstop, 14 hours, and laid out a lot of the details publicly of not just Kassoon's charges, but also things that had happened with the drill instructors and allegations that they had faced that really hadn't become public before then for almost a year after the death of the recruit.
And I think it's important for the listeners to understand, like, having the battalion commander, a lieutenant colonel in command being charged, that's pretty serious. That suggests that there was, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but from what I've read and your reporting, the case against him wasn't like he was directly abusive of recruits, but he was fostering an atmosphere that was conducive to such conduct. Is that fair to say?
No, I'll push a little bit back on that. It's actually his case is quite unique in the, and I hate almost using this word as a writer, because I'm probably going to use it wrong, but almost a sense of irony or the opposite of effect. So there was some backstory going back to this, where there had been some problems with allegations of recruit abuse over in 4th Battalion, where the females were trained. That Lieutenant Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Germano, Kate Germano, had received some horrible surveys and command climate surveys and was basically drummed out of the Marine Corps early retirement. And then shortly after that happened.
Yeah, I think she's actually coming out with a book about that, if I'm not mistaken. I follow her, and I think she's about to publish a book on that subject.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. She's been a very vocal critic and outspoken in defiance of what had happened to her and in her version of events. Around that same time, Lieutenant Colonel Kassoon had come in shortly around the time she had come in to take command the year before, and he and other battalion commanders saw, wow, this is they're firing a battalion commander over there at 4th Recruit Training Battalion. He had been sent in by the Colonel Hawk at the time, then regimental commander, and was basically told, go fix things down there, because 3rd Recruit Training Battalion, I guess, going on court testimony, had decades worth of reputations because quote-unquote something third. They were the recruit training battalion farthest from the flagpole and seemed to have a reputation for physical abuse going back, I mean, even decades, according to some of the testimony.
Right, yeah. I had read that too, okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, so get to your question. I apologize. I'm getting a little digression here.
But not at all.
So much information. So, yeah, to your point, he actually came in and was really tightened up ship, you know. I think it sounds like from all the testimony, all the official statements, and was kind of hammering his captains, hammering his enlisted. If they screwed up, they got just automatic, you know, documents, paperwork in their file. Whereas some of those things, you know, if there's an allegation, it's not, he's kind of fuzzy on the details. No one's like pressing anything to the OIG or something. Well, we'll handle it in house, we'll work through it. If there's a repeated pattern, then we'll go to paperwork. He was just shortcutting that and hitting it hard. And then when the Lieutenant Colonel Germano over at 4th Battalion got fired, the allegations and testimony were that he got a little scared for his career and thought, well, maybe I'll back off these guys. I don't want my captains and my drill instructors giving me, you know, bad reviews when these surveys come through. And that's kind of where things, that's right there, that little nugget of time is right where that kind of thing started spinning a little bit, and you saw some unfolding events that played out in different court-martial charges.
How many court-martials did we have out of all of this? I believe there were four, and it was Gunnery Sergeant Felix who received the most punishment. I believe he had a 10-year sentence?
Correct. He's on appeal for that. He has automatic appeal with the severity of that sentence. He was convicted in court-martial down at Camp Lejeune in November. There was another staff sergeant and a sergeant who faced charges. I think they both pleaded out eventually. And others faced some investigations, but ultimately were not charged. So at least four, to my memory. Now, my former colleague, Jeff Schogel, who since left Marine Corps Times, the report, a top-notch reporter, covered all those much more detail than I did prior to me taking on the story.
Right. And in fairness, covering military issues, courts-martial, or especially administrative punishments, is not the easiest thing to do. It's not like there's a central repository for all of that that you can just go to for information.
I'll give you a good example of that. I mean, something as simple as the charge sheet, which is just something laying out the actual official charges that the Marine's facing. You don't get that unless you're physically present at the actual court-martial. They won't fax or email it to you. And for instance, you know, there were some changes to the charges that he ultimately pleaded guilty to versus his original charging, but they would not provide us with the original charge sheet, even though we sat there for 6 hours through the court-martial. We only received the updated charge sheet, so they couldn't answer detailed questions about what had actually changed. So, yeah, that's something so perfunctory and simple on the civilian side. It's public record. Anybody can go pull it. Something as simple as what in the heck this guy's being charged with doesn't get into your hands until you're physically there the day of the hearing.
I'll tell you. So we would call that a cleanse charge sheet. So after a plea agreement, whatever the individual is going to plead to, then we would rewrite the charge sheet to reflect that. But not getting that original charge sheet, I mean, that's problematic because we don't know what the original allegations were. So it's, to a certain extent, I think that the public gains from knowing what the allegations were and then the determination of what he actually pled to.
Now, in this scenario, just for your listeners, I happen to have been at the original Article 32, and the overall charges did not change in this, but you can probably explain this better as an attorney. The specifications within the charges did. Now, I don't have a detailed listing to read off to your readers. They'd probably fall asleep if I did, but basically there were some more events that were charged within those three core charges originally that were removed from, like you said, the cleanse charge sheet, which y'all pleaded to. Whereas in civilian court, you'll see they'll just read out the whole original, you know, or updated or superseding indictments, perhaps, and then that'll be all there, and they'll just say what he or she's pleading to, almost like a multiple choice.
Right, yeah. So in the military, the language we use, we have the charge, and that is whatever violation of the UCMJ, just the numerical violation and its title. And then the specification is usually a sentence, or it could be multiple sentences below that explains exactly how it's alleged that the person committed the crime. So if it was larceny, then it would explain that on or about this date, this individual stole this thing from this place. So charge and specification kind of a lay or just a normal understanding. They're kind of the same, but we split them out for some historical reason that I don't know. Just one of those where it was always one of those things where you would mess it up as a young lieutenant or something when you were trying to practice in front of an older judge, and then the judge would say, no, that's the specification, not the charge, and you just look at yourself and think, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Wouldn't it be great to be pain-free? You know, to feel like you used to feel. BioWave is the life-changing, non-opioid, effective way to block chronic or acute pain. It's designed to block pain at the push of a button with patented smart pain blocking technology. Unlike outdated pain relief devices or treatments, BioWave blocks pain at the source. Proven effective and used by more than 30 VAs, active military, SEAL teams, and most NFL, NBA, and MLB teams. Visit BioWave.com to read testimonials from veterans and active military. BioWave, VVA recognized, VA prescribed, FDA cleared, and made in America. If you are a veteran or active duty military, or know someone that needs safe, non-opioid, and effective help managing pain, please go to BioWave.com and learn how to get treatment at no cost. Experience BioWave. Block the pain and get back in the game. BioWave.com. Smarter pain blocking technology. So what were the charges in this case?
Dereliction of duty, making official statements, and conduct unbecoming.
Yeah, and those are probably very, because the conduct unbecoming and dereliction, those are pretty similar in the sense that your conduct is unbecoming if you aren't non-derelict in your duties. So those are similar. I would imagine the other one was he making a statement to NCIS or was it an internal investigation?
It was the Inspector General. They had called down. And we can get all the moving parts of that for the readers, or sorry, listeners who haven't been exposed to this case. But yeah, a lot of the headline highlights that grabbing people's attention is, of course, the death of the recruit. That's only one small component of the three charges and multiple specifications he faced. He has no direct tie to the actual death of the recruit. He basically pretty much didn't follow an order to not put Gunnery Sergeant Felix back with recruits, and he wound up back with the recruits, and basically this guilty plea says that it's the lieutenant colonel's fault.
So, and Gunnery Sergeant Felix was, as we would call it, he was taken off the drill field. So I believe he was a senior drill instructor, wasn't he?
He served a couple platoons or more prior to becoming the senior drill instructor for Sadiq's platoon. He had faced some allegations. I think we spoke about this the first time we talked about this case. It was interesting because there were some allegations of recruit abuse that went back almost a year prior to the incident of the recruit's death. And those incidents had happened maybe two or three cycles before. However, the allegations didn't come to the command until those recruits who alleged the abuse had, you know, finished boot camp, graduated, gotten to their MOS schools, and then filed it there, which worked its way through the chain. So it was a good 9 months or 6 or 9 months after the actual incident that command down at Paris Island actually even knew that these allegations were out there.
That's probably not that uncommon in the sense that when you're leaving OCS or boot camp, you're just almost no matter what had happened, you're just happy to just be gone from there. And like you're happy to have just endured it. So it kind of makes sense that those Marines then go on to their following MOS school and kind of get acclimatized to the Marine Corps, then looking back on it saying, hey, there was some bad stuff that went on during my time at boot camp.
Absolutely. I mean, just on a smaller note, I can recall, you know, 20 plus, almost 20 plus years ago that I was, you know, leaving MCRD San Diego. I didn't know a guy in my platoon who did have some kind of injury or illness, and they weren't going to sick call that last week because they were not going to get held up for any reason.
Right? Yeah.
Graduation. Limp off the parade deck if they had to.
Yeah, exactly. That, like, just get me out of here. Even if I'm going someplace that's worse, at least it's different worse. I don't care. I just need to leave here. And I think it's really important, this, you're the reporting you're doing on this, because we really do, we have some just incredible Americans that go into the Marine Corps, some great people, you know, young men and women just out of high school or a year or two out after that. And the idea, I mean, everybody has, you know, at least that concept that they could be injured or even killed serving their country. But the idea that it would happen during training is just anathema to everything that we've, you know, the culture that we've built, that should never occur.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, and as each decade passes, I think culturally we get a little more and more sensitive to you know, abuse and to, you know, training deaths. You can get national headlines, you know, in a helicopter crash. Those are tragic, and those are horrible things, but you go back two generations and hundreds, if not thousands, of people died just training up to go to World War II, never left the country.
Right.
So it's definitely a cultural shift. I mean, I think for the better. I don't think anyone deserves, you know, death or serious injury or negligence from the people charged with their care. But it's definitely something that we take extremely seriously. I mean, I don't want to know when there was the last recruit death. I'm sure someone on Twitter can pop up and tell me it was just 2 years ago. I don't know, but it's something that I can recall being, you know, a regular occurrence in any fashion, in any training, even extreme, like special operations training. Deaths in training are very rare.
Yeah, I think during my 3 years at MCRD San Diego, we had a death of a drill instructor. He drowned. And then we had, I think, one other. We had a young man I represented there for a little while. He had shot himself in the leg. He didn't die, but he lost a limb. But yeah, it's pretty, as it should be, it's pretty rare. But usually you see, sometimes you'll have it around, I think that time when I was at MCRD, they had a drowning at Paris Island, a recruit drowning. But other than that, I mean, it's pretty rare.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So getting into the, digress a little bit, but getting into the Gunnery Sergeant Felix case. So what were the allegations about him putting, like, I mean, it sounds crazy, but putting recruits in a clothes dryer?
Right. There were a number of items. That was the most kind of salacious thing that popped out with him. Essentially, throughout his court martial, you know, witness after witness said that he had, I believe, at least one witness refuted this, but most of all the witnesses, recruits, both those who made allegations and those who just happened to be in the platoon, said that he made a lot of anti-Muslim statements, you know, singled out, you know, these couple of Muslim recruits, you know, basically just harassing them, you know, just individually and physically and verbally. You know, verbal abuse, that's boot camp, man. But,
right.
But to target someone for those types of things in this day and time, I don't, you know, that's questionable to begin with. Then more the physical abuse unfolded. And at one point, he was alleged to have, well, not alleged, he was convicted of it, to have forced these recruits into a clothing dryer and you know, not let them out until they swore off their Muslim faith just did a different kind of individual thing. And at that time, there's also allegations he smelled of alcohol. Like it was after hours, he was supposedly drinking and forcing these recruits to do these things. And they all just combined into a lot of bad stuff. But again, that's just to be clear again, so people keep track, that's a whole different platoon, you know, close to a year before the death of the other recruits. So that's the kind of setting the stage for what later happened.
And to be clear, listen, I don't think that either one of us would want the Marine Corps boot camp experience changed in the sense that it's going to be tough and you're going to be verbally abused, but you are all going to be verbally abused similarly. No one, you know, everybody's equally worthless at the beginning of that transformation.
Right.
That
there's no shortage of things they can pick out on you and make you feel weak.
Oh, right, right.
They don't have to use race or religion. They can do just fine without race or religion.
Right, and that we were all, I mean, that's a great part of it, is that you felt, you know, and continue to feel a brotherhood or, you know, sisterhood with your fellow Marines without regard to where they came from or, you know, what backgrounds they were. So, I mean, I think that is so destructive to that unit cohesion.
No, I think that's a good observation, yeah.
So back to Lieutenant Colonel Kassoon. What was the punishment he received?
So he actually he faced a 2/3 reduction in pay for 12 months, like a written reprimand. No confinement, no hard labor, anything like that. He wound up simply just receiving the reprimand and a reduction of about $1,000 in pay for 5 months, which is quite a bit less. I mean, it's basically taking them almost back down to major pay or a little bit around that area rather than the 2/3 reduction. He also, as part of his plea deal, he agreed to go ahead and submit his retirement paperwork. So he'll be retiring once all this clears through the channels and it gets approved. Now, technically, that all has to be stamped with approval by all the way up to the Secretary of the Navy. And the Secretary of the Navy could decide to retire him at a lower rank. That is one option that was discussed in court. He could not be reduced in rank, because I guess that doesn't actually happen to officers the way it was explained to me, but retired at a major rank. So he would lose a pay grade in his retirement over the course of his retirement benefits.
Yeah, it's actually the way they look at it is technically there's not a reduction, but they can go back and look at his record and determine the rank of major was the last rank that you served with adequately or that you honorably served. So then they can, again, it's just a different vocabulary, but reduce him. And then we call it a reduction in pay, but it's still the same. Like, he's getting about $1,000 fine for 5 months. And I would say the written reprimand, I've helped, or I've assisted general officers in drafting those. Those are pretty worthless. I mean, they don't really mean anything. The more important thing is the more damaging is his court-martial conviction and his agreement to, you know, waive any administrative board and submit his retirement paperwork. Because it's really a letter that would stay in your military file, but you're retiring.
Correct. Yeah. So basically, his career is over. I mean, whether it's 5 months from now or a year from now, however long the process takes, he won't be wearing a uniform again after this. That's probably the most severe part of it. And some people kind of skim the headlines and see recruit death and don't read deeper into the details might kind of scoff at that. But it's a fairly serious deal for a 28-year career Marine. Started as enlisted, commissioned, rose to the rank of lieutenant colonel, was likely on track to make colonel given his prior performance, you know, combat commands, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah. And then, yeah, he was the battalion commander. You do that correctly, you're pretty much, I mean, depending on the year, you're pretty much going to make colonel.
Right. And to go from enlisted to colonel in a career is exceptional. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Start out as officers, have a little bit of a jump. They do things right, they'll make colonel. But you know, you just start as a private PFC on those yellow footprints, and then less than, you know, 20 plus years later, you're commanding a battalion. That's a significant accomplishment.
Yeah, and I think this will be, I'll keep an eye on it and I'll update the listeners. Obviously, I have all of your information and your links to the story and have you on Twitter. But I think it'll also be interesting to hear about Lieutenant Colonel Kate Germano's book, because as you mentioned, like, she was really tough on her staff, and seeing how that interplayed with this, that being too tough on her staff got her fired, and then being too lenient got Lieutenant Colonel Kassoon, you know, court-martialed. It's a tough line to walk down there.
It's a heck of a balance. I wouldn't want it. I wouldn't ask for it. My hat's off to anybody who attempts it, especially as long as, of course, they attempt it with the right intentions. There were some allegations back and forth. Some people, you know, sung Lieutenant Colonel Kassoon's praises in his initial hearing. I would say of the 8 people who testified, at least 6 or 7 said positive things, even if they also said negative things. And many, you know, really valued him as a leader. Others said, you know, had a bone to pick and said he was a careerist, and he backed off surveys and did things kind of off book so he could, you know, keep himself clean for the next promotion. It's kind of who you believe and how do you weight the testimony and the evidence. I'm not an attorney. I'm just a guy in the peanut gallery taking notes.
Right.
But it was interesting. I will say, just I'd like to go quickly into the charges.
Go ahead, please.
It is a little more complicated than the recruit. But I would say I've covered hundreds or more criminal civil cases, a couple court martials now. I truly believe this man is genuinely contrite and regretful of his decisions. I really feel like he feels that he made a serious mistake, in the charges. And, you know, you kind of get the feeling that he is definitely regretting that he's not going to wear that uniform here shortly.
Yeah, was there much of an explanation? How was it that the Gunnery Sergeant Felix got back onto the drill field? Because for the listeners, you'll have probably, what, maybe 200 drill instructors at the depot. But then there's always at least 25 or so that are in training or may have been injured or kind of waiting around. Like, so there's definitely a pool of drill instructors who aren't actively being drill instructors. And was there any explanation of how Gunnery Sergeant Felix went from that pool of, you know, non-active hats to going back on the drill field?
To shortcut to the answer, and I can give a little more detail, my best estimation, having sat through both the hearings and done a good level of reporting, is basically the ball got dropped. He was pulled when the investigation became, came to their attention, I think, October of 2015. He was sent over, I can't remember exactly where he was doing some training, like, passing out gear or something, or maybe working at the, he wasn't with the recruits.
Right, right.
Then, leading up all the way into December of that year, now we'll keep that time frame in mind, there was back and forth because not that they were shorthanded. They won't say they were shorthanded, but he was a gunny. I mean, they wanted staff and COs as senior drill instructors. They didn't want sergeants there if they could help it. They wanted experience. And he had a few runs, with platoons. He knew what he was doing in other areas. So there was a pushback. There was a lot of talk between the regimental XO, the battalion XO, the sergeant's major for both the regiment and the battalion. And it was all kind of filtering back up to Kassoon. And I think he basically got a word of mouth or an email or basically saying, oh, all that stuff with that recruiter, that's all going to be I think it's a 5105. It's not going to be court-martial. We can put him back. But never actually did Kassoon go back to his regimental commander, Colonel Paul Cusinata, and say, can I put him back? And by not doing that, he basically disobeyed a written order to not place, instructors back to the recruits if they're under investigation for recruit abuse allegations.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So they were
big ball whack. Right?
Yeah. So he was kind of viewing it as this is probably just going to go away and be an administrative remark in his book. So let's get him back over there now because we could probably use him coming up in this next training cycle.
Right. Right. There was an interesting theme that played out. So this is all detailed much more in the first story I did back last June when they had Article 32. It's a much longer cover story we did, where there's a scene where you have Lieutenant Colonel Kassoon, you have Colonel Cusinata, the regimental commander, their appropriate XOs and sergeant majors all there doing the receiving, welcoming in the new series, what one of those platoons. So in that crowd, in that formation, is Recruit Sadiq. In front of Recruit Sadiq's platoon is Senior Drill Instructor Gunner Sergeant Felix. Everyone's standing right there physically in the flesh, and still nobody catches, hey, was everything cleared up with Felix? Like, no one even, it just doesn't happen. I mean, obviously they're busy. There's thousands of people flowing through there. I'm not saying they catch every detail, but it's a chilling kind of scene, because then 2 weeks later, Sadiq is dead, and the first question out of the colonel, the regimental commander's mouth is, why was Felix with the crew?
Yeah, and that even the regimental commander was eventually relieved in this case, wasn't he?
He did not face any charges. However, and I think we discussed this before, of the 8 witnesses, 5 were granted immunity, which was offered by the prosecution, not asked for.
Right.
And the 6th received some type of a deal, a kind of a settlement deal, not exactly immunity, but he agreed to testify, so his charges were reduced he wouldn't face charges. I can't remember the exact details. And nobody else in the officer ranks faced charges in this or the other related offense. And if you have just a minute, I would like to explain the other items because...
Oh, please do.
It's not just the... Just quickly. So going back to those surveys that Kassoon had faced, well, he received a negative survey, or what he characterized as a critical survey. And he had it in his mind, this is back in spring of 2015, a year before the Sadiq incident, even before Felix, the allegations of Felix that come to the surface later that fall. And he had in his mind that this particular captain, that's kind of a mouthy captain, frankly, I saw him testify.
Right.
Had it out for him, didn't like him, was basically giving him a bad review, a bad survey. And he said that to his XO and said that to another captain, which I think was probably a mistake as a lieutenant colonel. And a short time later, that captain doesn't get this job he's asked for. He wanted to be an assistant director with the drill instructor school. Didn't get it. He's convinced that Kassoon roadblocked him on that or gave a bad review for him. So he calls up for an IG investigation. The IG comes down, interviews everybody. Kassoon lies to him, tells him he didn't say anything about his suspicions about this captain to his XO or the captain, and then writes out a statement, and prior to his XO going to talk to the IG, gives it to the XO. He says so that he can make sure he had everything accurate, but the XO interpreted it as like, hey, let's make our story straight. And that developed into those charges. So a whole separate incident
right.
of this kind of concerns about getting fired opened that can of worms up. I'm not sure we would never have even known about that had it not been for the recruitment allegations and the death of Sadiq. But it shows a lot more turmoil going on in leadership there and a way overstressed and, you know, people making mistakes in the leadership levels. He cited widespread failure of leadership in that sentencing. The judge himself didn't just pin it on Kassoun.
Right. Yeah, and those command climate surveys are supposed to be, and they didn't come around until maybe my last 2 or 3 years in the Corps, but those were supposed to be very secretive. I mean, anonymous. Those were, you know, kind of computer-generated climate surveys that the commanding officer wasn't supposed to know by individual what was said.
Oh, and the other strange thing about that is, according to the captain who testified on the stand in a hearing last year, he says he's not even the one who made those comments on the survey. It's a really situation. It's almost a game of telephone.
Right, right.
The old school game of telephone where, you know, this colonel thinks this captain said this. He's actually not the one who said it, but then he goes talking to everybody about it. And then that captain thinks, well, he thinks bad things about me, so now I didn't get this job. I'm wondering, is this Marine Corps recruit training or is this like high school sleepover?
Right, right. Yeah, it does seem a little bit like that they aren't taking everything is seriously, or yeah, just as you mentioned, it seems like kind of middle schoolish that, well, I think he said something bad about me, and what you're not supposed to think that. You're supposed to take that on board, and the higher command's supposed to know that, like how you're commanding, not a survey of determining who you're going to later levy allegations against.
Right, right. That's my observation. I think if you read the transcripts of what hearing, you might draw similar conclusions. But of course, that's up to a reader to decide. But yeah, that's kind of how I kind of took it after listening to it a couple times.
Yeah, and finally, one last question. So, where did this court martial occur?
This one was at Quantico.
Did they explain why it wasn't down at Parris Island and then it went up at Quantico?
The way that it was described to me by the public affairs officer who handles Training Education Command public affairs across the Marine Corps was that due to the fact that it involved an officer, it would require that they decided to hold it at Quantico just because the resources were available for that there in that district. Now, I didn't go to nuts and bolts. I didn't even really write about that. That's a little some details that I just couldn't get to with the space I had provided. But that's the way it was described to me.
That's a pretty fair explanation. I mean, at the recruit depots, you don't have a that big of a pool of officers. So if it was going to be a contested court-martial and you were going to have, you know, jury members, that would make sense that you would take it to a much larger officer population, especially senior officers, because you have to have jury members that are senior to the accused. So, yeah, that makes sense that they would go to Quantico. I was just wondering if there was something else that pushed that, maybe witnesses or something.
That was what was explained to me. Again, that was quite a while back, but that's as far as I can remember, that's how they explained it.
Well, Todd, thank you for being on again. We'll put all of your stories in the show notes, and can't thank you enough for being here.
Thanks again, Wyrick. Always a pleasure.
Military Justice wouldn't be possible without the fine sound editing by Hannah McCarthy. And this episode is dedicated to the memory of my Uber producer, Dreadnought. You will always be missed out here.